Prvriti Lakshanashchaiva Traigunya Vishayo Mune Yasabhal Nina Pakritir Guna Sarga Puna Puna. Alright, Marajis. Pravritti Lakshanashchaiva Traigunya Vishayo Mune Yosavadina Pakritir Guna Sarga Puna Puna. Word to word meaning pravritti, by inclination. Lakshana, symptomized. Cha, also. Eva, indeed. Traigunya, the three modes of nature. Vishaya, possessing as objectives. Mune, O great sage. Yaha, which, asau, that, alina, pakriti. Of one who is not free from the clutches of maya. Guna sarga, in which there is a creation of material bodies. Puna puna, again and again. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O great sage Shukadeva Goswami, unless the living entity is free from the infection of the material modes of nature, he receives different types of bodies in which to enjoy or suffer. And according to the body, he is understood to have various inclinations. By following these inclinations, he traverses the path called Prvritti Marga, by which one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, as you have already described in the third canto. Purport, as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 25, Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitrir vrataha bhutani yanti bhutegya yanti ma yajino pimam. Quote, those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. And those who worship me will live with me. That's the end of the quote. Because of the influence of the various modes of nature, the living entities have various propensities, and therefore they are qualified to achieve various destinations. As long as one is materially attached, he wants to be elevated to the heavenly planets because of his attraction to the material world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, however, quote, those who worship me come to me, end quote. If one has no information about the Supreme Lord and his abode, one tries to be elevated only to a higher material position. But when one concludes that in this material world there is nothing but repeated birth and death, he tries to return home back to Godhead. If one attains that destination, he never returns to this material world, yat gatva na nivartante tat dhamma paramamama. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 19, verse 151, Brahmanda brahmite kona bhagyavan jiva guru krishna prasad he pai bhakti lata bija. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down into the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives a seed of the creeper of devotional service. That's called a shraddha or faith. That's the end of the quote. All living entities are rotating throughout the universe, going sometimes up to the higher planetary systems and sometimes down to the lower planets.
Yes.
This is the material disease, which is known as Prvritti Marga. When one becomes intelligent, he takes to Nivritti Marga, the path of liberation, and thus instead of rotating within this material world, he returns home back to Godhead. Necessary. returning back home to God. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So as we begin our discussion on this section yesterday, these first set of verses is Parikshit Maharaj speaking, and he wants to inquire how the living entities can be saved from going to hell, such as the nature of a compassionate Vaishnava. He wants to save people from going down to hell. But before he inquires from Parikshit Maharaj, from Shukadeva Goswami, he wants to instill enthusiasm in Shukadeva Goswami by demonstrating to him that I have understood the topics that you have already discussed in the previous cantos. Because it's very discouraging when you explain things and no one gets it. You know, and then you ask them if they get it and they go... And then if you ask them to articulate what they've understood and they can't articulate anything, like our Bhagavad Gita classes, I open up every class with, can everyone review what we did yesterday? And everyone goes, I'm like, am I speaking Sanskrit or English? Then I ask again, can anyone articulate what we discussed yesterday? Everyone is silent. So that can be discouraging. So Parikshit Maharaj wants to encourage Shukadeva Goswami by demonstrating that he has understood the previous discussions that we have heard about in the first five cantos. And so that's what we're hearing in these set of verses now. Parikshit Maharaj is articulating what he has understood from the previous discussions. So yesterday we heard about the Nivritti Mark, which was discussed in the second canto. And here we're hearing about the Pravritti Mark, which is discussed in the third canto. So Parikshit Maharaj wants Shukadeva Goswami to understand, to be encouraged by showing that I've understood this topic also, as discussed in the third canto. So Pravritti Mark means a path of sense enjoyment, which leads to continued existence in the material world and higher planetary systems, middle planetary systems, lower planetary systems. This is called the Pravritti Mark. And why does a living entity traverse the Pravritti Mark if it's just repeated birth and death? Why does he traverse the Pravritti Mark if it's just repeated birth and death? Yes, that's true. Why is his senses uncontrolled? Yes, that's true. Why doesn't he have knowledge of the Supreme? Yes. Because of the influence of the modes of material nature. All these points are correct, but we just stick to what it says in the purport, in the verse. Due to the influence of the modes of material nature, the living entity continues to traverse the path of Pravritti Marg, which leads to repeated birth and death. Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Pakritihi kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma karta hamiti manyate. The living entity thinks he is acting independently, but this is just due to the influence of false ego. He's a puffed up person thinking all my ideas are my own creation. I'm making this decision without any influence of anyone. I'm independent. But Krishna says actually he's acting under the spell of the modes of material nature. Another verse, Bhagavad Gita, Ukramatam sitam vapi bhujanam vaguna vitam. You know this verse? Vimudha nanu pashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. You know this verse? Chapter 15, anyone knows this verse? Krishna says the living entity, he cannot understand bhujanam vaguna vitam. He cannot understand how he's enjoying under the modes of material nature. Vimudha nanu pashanti, being foolish, he cannot see this. But those who have jnana chakshu, they can understand what is happening. So due to the influence of the modes of material nature, someone has particular sorts of inclinations in terms of those modes of nature. So someone has inclination in the mode of goodness. Someone has inclination in the mode of passion. Someone has inclination in the mode of ignorance. So that's why Prabhupada quotes this verse in the beginning of the purport. Yanti deva vrata devan, pichen yanti pitre vrataha, bhutani yanti bhutegya, yanti ma yajino pimam. Yanti deva vrata devan means that that person has inclination in the mode of goodness. So he worships devatas and he goes to the devatas, mode of goodness inclination. Pichin, yanti pitre vrataha means that person has inclinations in the mode of passion. So he goes to the ancestors. It's the destination of the mode of passion. Understand? And bhutani yanti bhutegya means worship of ghosts and spirits, vampires, werewolves, witches. Maharaj was mentioning how these types of things are very popular in the modern world. Witches, warlocks, vampires, werewolves, isn't it? Even I also like.
I was always into those types of shows growing up. So this is a mode of ignorance sort of worship. So you get a destination, a mode of ignorance. So that's the idea. Krishna says similar thing in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, verse 20. Kaimaish taishtarhita gyana prapadyante anyadevataha. Then what is that? Yam yam niyamam astaya pakritta niyataswaya. That someone's knowledge is stolen by lusty desires. Kaimaish taishtarhita gyana. His knowledge is taken away by lusty desires. And therefore he worships anyadevata. He worships other devas, not the Supreme Lord. And how does he conduct his worship? Pakritta niyataswaya, according to the modes of nature. And so he gets a certain destination. Understand? So when you're when one is certain inclinations for action and worship, and he gets a destination that is corresponds with the mode of nature he's moving under. Does it make sense? Simple point, right? So in this way, he continues to traverse the Pravritti Marg. Then Krishna says, Yanti mat yajinopimam, that those who worship me, they come to me. Now Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. Tri bir guru mayer bhavari bi sarvami dam jagat mohitam namijananti mame byaparam avyam. Krishna says he's beyond the modes, so no one can know me. If we only know the modes of material nature, and Krishna says he is beyond the modes of nature, he said no one can know me. So how is it, he said, Yanti mat yajinopimam, those who worship me, come to me. But if we are under the modes of nature and Krishna is beyond the modes, we cannot know him, then how we can worship him? Know him and worship him. What is the answer? That's interesting because that's the next verse. He's saying that we can, by surrender to him, but he said that we cannot even know him because he's above the modes of nature. If I don't know him, I can surrender to him. So what is the answer? Yeah, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva. If one is Bhagyavan, if he is fortunate, then he gets an opportunity to. And that guru instills in him Bhakti Lata Bija. Bhakti Lata Bija means the seed of faith, pure devotional Shraddha. And that pure devotional Shraddha leads to pure devotional worship. And that pure devotional worship leads to attainment of Krishna. So one gets an opportunity to come out of the material world when he gains information about the spiritual world and Krishna and Krishna bhajan and the goal of Krishna prema. Otherwise, without knowing that, he has no desire to leave the material world. That is his only lot, isn't it? That's what Prabhupada says here. I'll read it to you. As long as one is materially attached, he wants to be elevated to the heavenly planets because of his attraction to the material world. Then Prabhupada says in a couple sentences later, if one has no information about the Supreme Lord in his abode, one tries to be elevated only to a higher material position. So that is our lot. If you don't get mercy of Sadhu Guru, then our lot is this material world. There is no other knowledge, no other information. Like Krishna says also in Bhagavad Gita. I'm quoting a lot of Bhagavad Gita these days because that's where my absorption is. I'm trying to connect all my thoughts to Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in chapter 15 how, when describing the banyan tree, yes, you all know this analogy, and he says that no one knows where its foundation is, where it ends, where it begins, how it's situated. Because he's right in the middle of it. So in other words, he was bewildered. At the same time, he has to cut down that tree by the weapon of detachment. Asanga dridhena tritva. The weapon of asanga. Understand? So what is the weapon of detachment? How do you get that weapon of detachment? You have any? How do you get that weapon of detachment? Asanga dridhena chitwa. Chitta, I mean, cut. Yeah, okay. You already, huh? Close. He said knowledge. Higher taste. They're connected. Huh? Yes. Everything comes down to this point, isn't it? By association of devotees, they give knowledge of the absolute reality. And that gives you ability to discriminate sat from asat. And then with that ability to discriminate sat from asat, you can desire sat, isn't it? And then by such desire, you take up Krishna bhajan, and then you go to Krishna. Otherwise, this is our lot. This is the only thing we know in the material world. So you continue on the pravritti marg. So one needs to be fortunate. And as Parshit Maharaj's mood is, for those who are fortunate, then they should try to make others fortunate by vibrant. For people's avail. So that's what the purport says. Are there any questions about that? Any points? That's Parashat Mara is demonstrating that he's understood this particular element of the previous discussions.
Okay, I guess I have 2 points. Yeah. One is, we hear the word worship, you know, and we're one who worships vampires, werewolves, like that, will go to lower planetary systems where they can find those things, probably. But when we say worship, you know, how am I going to translate that? Like, how am I going to go to somebody and say, you realize, you know, right now you're worshiping this vampire? They're going to be like, no, I'm not worshiping the vampire. I'm just, you know, I'm just watching this TV show where there's vampires in it, and, you know, I'm enjoying it, but, you know, yeah. Not worship. So what do we mean by when we say worship? You know, what is, can we expand on it?
Yeah, that's a good question. What do we mean by worship? Because someone may say, I'm not, like, we may say, you're worshiping money. So I'm not worshiping money, I'm just using it. You can think of worship in terms of what a person dedicates his energies to. What is his senses dedicated to? How is he using his intelligence? How is he using his mind? How does he use his senses? So by that, you can understand what is the object of their worship, by how they dedicate their energy. So we think of worship in terms of dedication of one's facilities. Then it becomes clear that people are worshiping money, or they worship their family members, or they worship their country, because that's what all their minds, his intelligence is dedicated to. In fact, when Krishna describes worship in the Bhagavad Gita, he always clarifies it with adjectives such as giving your mind and intelligence to me, dedicating your senses to me. So that's what worship really means. So then the idea is by dedicating the mind, intelligence, senses to various things in the modes of nature, then they will receive a corresponding destination.
Okay, yeah. Follow-up question. Yeah. I guess something I'm always wondering is, Krishna does always say, dedicate your mind to me, engage your intelligence in me, like that.
Yeah.
And we understand from Prabhupada that the mind is a material facility. So.
So also the senses.
Yeah, so are the senses. So how are we able to connect with Krishna in that way, like through those mediums, like through the intelligence.
Those mediums do not have the inherent ability to connect with Krishna. But when combined with bhakti, then that bhakti connects one to Krishna. Analogy given, I've been mentioning this many times now. Analogy is given by Sanatan Goswami. You stick iron rod into fire, and then the fire becomes one with the iron rod, right? By being in the fire for a long time. Then the fire becomes one with the iron rod. Then when you touch that iron rod to the cloth burns, right? What burns the cloth? The fire burns the cloth, right? Not the iron rod. Because the iron rod doesn't have the ability to burn the cloth. It's the fire that's become one with the iron rod, which does the burning action, right? Can you understand that now? So similarly, when one keeps himself in the fire of bhakti, then bhakti, this is described like this in BRS in the commentaries of Jiva Goswami, that bhakti becomes, so bhakti, of course this is referring to a perfectional stage, appears in the mind. So someone may think that bhakti is coming from the mind, because bhakti makes its appearance in the mind, just like Krishna may make his appearance from anyone, but that doesn't mean Krishna comes from that plane. So similarly, bhakti makes its appearance in the mind, and then becomes one with mind, and then that bhakti allows for one to connect to Krishna. So so Krishna mentions this point in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 9, verse 1, verse 2, where he says, jnana vijnana saritam. So jnana means by knowledge, in the context of that section, the knowledge refers to bhakti, consisting of the angas of shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. So by that jnana, because only by bhakti you can know Krishna, isn't it? Bhaktiya mam abhijananti, Krishna, only by bhakti you can know me. So by that jnana, that knowledge of bhakti, consisting of the angas of shravanam and kirtanam, then what happens? Vijnana, you get realization. What is that realization? Experience of the absolute truth with your senses. But there are senses that are spiritualized by bhakti. So much is it important for bhakti. Otherwise, there is no hope. There is no chance, actually. Another verse that we can, I won't discuss it now, but another verse is of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 87, verse number 2. You can read verse number 1 also, it's good. Acharya Dev gives 2 really nice purports there. So that describes the same point as I'm making now. Okay, good? Okay. You have something? Or okay, you have something, Terrence.
Can one have a spiritual connection with God through like bhakti or devotion unconsciously without having any true realization to Krishna, but they have some type
of... Can you give an example? Obviously, you're thinking of something.
Well, for instance, like growing up, one of my best friends, like his mother, she was a Christian, but she, I would say, in every context, she was a spiritual woman. You know, she was very devoted. She had the same, like, as you would say, as a devotee, she had the same understanding and connection with God as someone who would be a devotee, but she wasn't exposed to, like, this type of Vedic knowledge. But I would still consider
sure.
her...
I'm not going to comment on that, because I can't say what is one's connection with God or not. I have no right to make such a statement. What I can say is that your consideration of what is spiritual is probably not the highest consideration, provided that you had no knowledge. So when you consider that I consider someone to be very spiritual without knowledge, what does that actually mean? It means nothing without knowledge. So when we oftentimes we make comments like that, you hear many people make comments like that, that person's a very spiritual person. But what is your basis for such a statement? If you have no knowledge of what it means to be spiritual, that's like saying that person, he's very good at chemistry, but you don't know what chemistry is. So how can you make such a statement? So similarly, when we don't know what it means to be spiritual, or we don't even know what it means to be religious, then our statement could be more just an emotional sentiment than anything substantial. In other words, we have no basis for making a statement either way, really, whether they're spiritual or not spiritual, because we don't know. So we have just some consideration, which may be more of an emotional one. As far as those individuals are concerned, we cannot say they don't have a connection with God. That is between them and the Lord. Of course, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita speaks very scientifically, by which one can understand that, particularly if you look at chapter 14, which is the chapter dealing with the modes of material nature. Krishna speaks about someone who's beyond the influence of the modes of material nature and the type of consciousness and subsequent behavior they manifest in the material world. So by that kind of understanding, you might be able to make out more clearly, at least who is not so much on the spiritual platform yet, although they may have some spirituality or some dedication to the Lord. So like that.
For instance, last night you used the example when we were in Bhagavad Gita class that in order for someone to have a clear understanding of what their spiritual practice or religious practice is, they will have to be versed in what they're studying and be able to like go to scripture or whatever. So in that context, I know when I was in my association with my friend, his mother, like every day, at the same time, at 5 o'clock when I was over there, she used to have devotion where everyone get together and like, they had to like read the Bible. And she also like she was a minister or whatnot. Not also in the fact that she preached, but in how she lived her life, how she treated other people. And I recognized that even though at the time my knowledge was on a more mundane level than what it is now, even though it's still mundane, but I guess from how she lived her life, she practiced as she preached. So I was saying in that
Hitler people, too.
I mean, but well, Hitler was like he was.
I don't mean that. That may be an unfair comparison.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying my point remains the same. Without the context of our knowledge, we can't make a statement either way. Whatever we're saying is just a sentiment. You know, so Hitler also practiced what he's preached. That's an unfair comparison, but I just said it to drive the point home. So she may have practiced what she preached and so on. That doesn't make her a spiritual person necessarily, nor does it not make her non-spiritual also. And therefore, I don't know her. I can't make any comments about her and so on. I can just make a general statement based on what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about transcendental person. He speaks quite elaborately in practically every chapter about the consciousness and subsequent behavior of very spiritual persons in chapter 2 and chapter 3 and chapter 4 and chapter 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7. Not so much. Chapter 7 speaks more about surrender. Anyway, chapter 14, chapter 13. So he gives a very elaborate understanding of what it means to be transcendental. So with that, with that knowledge, we might be able to make a better discrimination about a person. You know, it's not that just someone practices what they preach that makes them spiritual. There are a lot of people who practice what they preach. Richard Dawkins practices what he preaches. Nonsense. So that doesn't give any basis. So my point remains the same. Point number one, I can't make any statement about her or people in general. I don't know them. I don't know their consciousness and so on. Point number two, we can't really say if we're operating from a platform of no knowledge to be spiritual. Whatever definition we're giving must be the one that's given by the modes of material nature. Pakriti hi kriyamau nani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankari mudatma kardami kumaita.
In like the same respects, it can be people that are in this, like in this sampradaya as well, and they can be like well versed on scripture, but they might not practicing that as well. Like, and it was showing your actions, like you judge a man by his fruits necessarily, not so much as how okay. much they know.
I'm not saying that if you're in ISKCON or the Gaudiya Sampradaya, that means you're better off than anyone else. My point is a simple one. Do you have knowledge or not? So you can be in ISKCON and Gaudiya Sampradaya and be in ignorance, as a vast majority of our members probably are. Or because vast majority of members of any institution are quite neophyte and quite unknowledgeable about their own tradition, including us. But so my point is another point, which is a simpler point. Do you have knowledge or not? What's the basis of your statement? Is it coming from Shastra authoritative understanding, or is it coming from the concoctions of your mind given to you by Maya? So that's the point. Okay, you can go in there, you can go.
If you worship the ancestors, then you go to the ancestors. So is there any reference of what it means that you go to your ancestors? Because they could be anywhere in the...
Well, there's a you know, pre-triloka, the planet of trees. Prabhupada's early disciples, when they were translating Nectar Devotion, they translated pre-triloka as the planet of trees. These are the planets of the forefathers. But there's apparently a planet where forefathers reside, and you can go there. Do we really need more information than that? I mean, as far as we're concerned, the transcendental.
No, I was just asking in terms of if someone else asked, then how to address that.
Yeah, you can say there's a planet, the pre-triloka is what is being spoken of here. Of course, most people probably just return to the earth planet, because they don't really worship their ancestors according to Vedic rites and so on, by which you can go to the pre-triloka. They just do sense gratification. So they probably return. If they're in a mode of passion, they'll return to the earth planet. Yeah.
My question is stemming from this use of the word pravritti marg and how it seems to indicate that the consciousness are simply being pushed along the belt of the material world from one lower planet to a higher planetary system. And, you know, when we're under devotional service, you know, some aspect of our motivations are pure and some aspects are mixed. So some language I've heard recently stressed is that one must find the pure devotion within, you know, what he's operating with, because part of it is mixed and part of it is pure. So one must find out which part is pure. And
who must find out which part is pure?
The individual.
The individual must find out what part of his action is pure and which part is
Yeah,
not
and
pure.
So I'm just, based on this discussion, I'm trying to understand how to apply that and what that means.
Well, what part of the discussion? study Sharanagati, then you can do that. 32 songs, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, write Sharanagati. Sharanagati is the external expression of pure devotional faith. So you study Sharanagati, then you can understand with, you know, something more deep. It should be studied. In fact, that quote, you all gave me a card for Gaur Purnima, and the Acharya Nishaprabhu put a quote on there by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, which said that one should constantly read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prarthana, and Sharanagati. And that way he'll never be bewildered or something to that effect. So, you know, finding out which part is the modes of nature, which part is, you know, we just take it for granted. Most parts are the modes of nature. We study shared Nagati, we come to discriminate what are the elements of the behavior and consciousness of pure devotional individuals. And like that, we can strive for that, like that. Acharya, you want to say something or finish? Okay, I'm going to move on to the next verse then, which has no purport. Translation. Actually, how many of you have little books and computers and so on? Everyone should bring their little computer phones or whatever. Adharma lakshana na na narakashchanuvarnita manvantarashcha vyakyata adhya swayambhuvo yataha. Translation, you have also described at the end of the fifth canto the varieties of hellish life. Yes. Elaborately. That results from impious activities. And you have described in the fourth canto the first manvantar, which was presided over by Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma. Next verse. Dhara mandala samstanam bhaga lakshanamanatuh jyotirsham vivaranam cha yatedam asrija vibhuhu. Translation, my dear Lord, you have described the dynasties and characteristics of King Priyavrata and King Uttanapada. The Supreme Personality of God had created this material world with various universes, planetary systems, planets and stars, with varied lands, seas, oceans, mountains, rivers, gardens, and trees, all with different characteristics. These are divided among this planet Earth, the luminaries in the sky, and the lower planetary systems. You have very clearly described these planets and the living entities who live on them. That was also in the fifth canto, Stana. Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hear the words, Yate Dam Asrija Vibhuhu, clearly indicate that the Supreme, the Great, Almighty Personality of Godhead, created this entire material world with its different varieties of planets, stars, and so forth. Krishna created everything. Understand? Atheists try to conceal the hand of God, which is present in every creation, by their books, because that's the only way they can do it. But they cannot explain how all these creations could come into existence without a competent intelligence and almighty power behind them. Like, for example, one question that mystifies science is how if the material world is just a random manifestation of random events and so on, how is it that you can describe it in mathematical language? You know, that's one thing, that's one of the mysteries of science. It's a mystery. They don't have an answer yet, of course. They ain't going to find answers for everything, but they don't have an answer. How is it that the universe can be described in mathematical language if it's all just random stuff taking place and so on? For example, so Prabhupada says here, they cannot explain how they come into existence without a competent intelligence and almighty power behind them. Simply to imagine or speculate is a waste of time. They won't agree with that, but it is a waste of time. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, quote, I am the origin of everything. Mata sarvam pravartite, whatever exists in the creation emanates from me. Iti matva bhajante mam bhuta bhava samanvitaha. When one fully understands that I create everything by my omnipotence, one becomes firmly situated in devotional service and fully surrenders at my lotus feet. That's the end of the quote. Unfortunately, the unintelligent cannot immediately understand Krishna's supremacy. Nonetheless, if they associate with devotees and read authorized books, something they're generally not willing to, may gradually come to the proper understanding, although this may take many, many births to accumulate the necessary sukriti to actually associate with devotees. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 19, Bahunam Jamanante, Nyanavan Mamprapadite, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Samahatma Sudur Labhaha. After many, quote, after many deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. End quote. Vasudeva Krishna is the creator of everything, and his energy is displayed in various ways, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 4 through 5. A combination of the material energy, Bhumera Ponalao Vayu, and the spiritual energy, Jiva Bhuta Ma, what is that? Jiva Bhuta? 7, 5. Jiva Bhuta Ma. Oh, we're a little rusty in our Bhagavad Gita, you know? A little rusty in our Bhagavad Gita, isn't it, class? The living entity exists in every creation. Therefore, the same principle, the combination of the Supreme Spirit, the material elements, is the cause of the cosmic manifestation. Understand? This verse, which text is it? Number 5, is again kind of a description of the fifth canto, how of the variety of things that we find in the material existence. Trees, stars, planets, mountains, oceans. So much variety we find in this material world, isn't it? Where is all of this variety coming from? Sean, what is all the variety coming from? Say it, say it. Krishna. It's coming from Krishna. But the atheists, they do not want to accept this. They just want to speculate. Because Krishna accept this point that everything comes from Krishna, then what is the result? Iti ma twa bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. You have to worship me with all your heart and intelligence. So they don't want to dedicate their heart to Krishna. They want to act whimsically. Vartate kama karata, isn't it? What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, vartate kama karata. They want to do as they like. I want to do what I want, when I want, how I want, isn't it? We also think like that, isn't it? Even though we know better, we think like that also. So because they have that mentality, demoniac mentality, vartate kama karataha means demoniac mentality, asura bhava. Asura bhava means I do what I want, when I want, how I want. That's called as the asura bhava. We all think like that, isn't it? It's called mentality. Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, this is demoniac mentality. So it's not just a demon who has bat wings and horns or he's a Hitler with a gun, but just the idea that I do what I want, when I want, how I want, that mentality is demonic. So the atheists exhibit that to a very obvious degree. And as a result, they always try to conceal the greatness of God by saying that he is not the creator of all these varieties. It has come by chance. How so much things are coming? By chance it has come. They say like that. So unfortunately, they have to go on with this foolishness until they associate with devotees and read authorized books. But again, because they're under the spell of the modes of material nature, that never happens by chance. And the modes of material nature never guide you to transcendence. They guide you to repeated birth and death, planetary systems. That's what the modes of nature do. They never guide you to the absolute truth. So therefore, to get the chance to associate with devotees and read authorized books, it may take many lifetimes. Bahunam jamanante. Bahunam jamanante means many lifetimes to accumulate the necessary devotional sukriti by which you would want to associate with saintly persons. It may take many lifetimes. Bahunam jamanante. But when you get that chance to associate, then jnanavan, you develop real knowledge. And who has real knowledge? What is the symptom of a person who has real knowledge? Yeah, he surrenders to Vasudeva, mam prapadite, knowing Vasudeva is everything. That is a symptom of a person in knowledge. Shine, understand? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Symptom of a person, jnanavan means filled with knowledge. To be filled, like shradavan means to be filled with faith. With knowledge. What is the, if you have a little bit of knowledge, then you might go towards impersonal Brahman. But if you fill with a lot of knowledge, then you surrender to Krishna. Mam prapadite. Shine. Are you hearing? Vasudeva Sarvamiti, understanding that Lord Vasudeva is everything. Samahatma Sridhulabha, such a great soul, of course, is very rare. So the principle of this existence, of course, is a combination of matter and spirit, as Krishna has also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. therefore, Parikshit Maharaj shows that he's understood this topic also. Are there any questions about this? Yeah.
Mentioned the modes of nature, they don't drive onto sense, rather repeated birth and death. But isn't the idea that the material energy, Durga, she's inflicting, you know, she has all these weapons.
So you
she's
may say indirectly, yeah, indirectly it may inspire a search for the absolute through suffering. So that is the grace in suffering. That suffering may inspire a person to turn his head towards the absolute, but that's, of course, if there's sufficient sukriti. That is the important point. Just like Prabhupada has commented on this in the 8th canto, in the Gajendra Moksha pastime, when Gajendra is being attacked by the elephant. So he puts up a good fight for about 1,000 celestial years, which is like a really long time. Finally, when he realizes that I'm going to die, then he decides to surrender to God and offer prayers to the Lord. And why did he make that decision? Prabhupada points out because of sukriti. There's a background of sukriti there. Suffer without sukriti, you become more demoniac, more atheistic, more merged into the mode of ignorance when you suffer. So there is an indirect encouragement by the Maya Shakti in the form of suffering, but even that suffering, in order to help us turn towards at least inquiring about the absolute, there should be some background of sukriti. Otherwise, you merge into ignorance, you become more suric, actually. There is no God like that. There's like one, I shared this many times, one young man, he was coming to our temple and his mom died. So, you know, after maybe 1 year he was coming as a devotee, started chanting 16 rounds, he bought a diamond ring for Srimati Radharani, which was later on stolen, for which we have these gates now. That's why we actually got the gates, even though we suspected it was an inside job. Anyway, so he even bought a diamond ring for Srimati Radharani, a very, you know, so much was his... he was becoming interested in Krishna consciousness. Then his mom died. She was already a very old lady also. And then she died. And then devotees, I remember at least myself, I was going to the hospital to be with him and give him encouragement. I was calling him and everything. Then after she left the body, he asked me, and she ate meat and everything. She wasn't a devotee, just a nice old Hindu lady. He asked me, did my mom go to Vaikuntha? I was like, oh, damn, why did you ask me that? So I said, I was like, Krishna, help. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And then I said, if you become pure devotee of the Lord, definitely she would attain Vaikuntha. And I thought that was such a good answer. I was like, that's brilliant, you know. So I simultaneously encouraged him to become more pure devotionally inclined. And that way I didn't say she didn't go, which is what I was actually thinking, because she ate me and all these things, and she kind of derided the devotees a little bit because her son became a devotee. But then shortly thereafter that, he started finding fault with Krishna. And then Smarana Prabhu was the president. And Krishna Smarana Prabhu didn't visit the hospital when his mom was there. So he blamed Krishna Smarana Prabhu for not coming, even though he was so busy. And so I said, but so many devotees came. I came. I was closer to him that time. And that way he left devotional service like that shortly thereafter. He caught some bad sangha first, and then became more and more offensive, and then he left. So, although he has enough sukriti to associate with devotees, you know, offenses ended up bringing him out. So, suffering is not always an impetus to take shelter of God. Any other questions about this purport? Yes.
Here, Srila Prabhupada makes a point about intelligence to understand Krishna consciousness.
The why?
Here, Srila Prabhupada makes that one should be intelligent to understand Krishna consciousness.
One should be...
intelligent.
Intelligent to understand Krishna consciousness. Okay.
Yes. So, what this intelligence should be based on mode of goodness, or it is intelligence that is coming from bhakti?
And you could say both, because there will be a connection between the two ideas. But yeah, intelligence purified by study of Shastra, understand? Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one worships me and performs the Gyana Yajna, which he speaks about in chapter 4 and also in chapter 9, by studying Bhagavad Gita. So that type of intelligence. Not this mundane intelligence that, you know, I know so much of math, so much of science. That type of intelligence won't help you. Actually, that type of intelligence might block you. Oftentimes we see people who are so-called intelligent, they're actually blocked by their so-called intellect. So it's an intelligence that's based on shastra, guru, sadhu, that type of intelligence. Yeah, and does that answer the question? Any other question about this purport? Next time y'all bring your own phones and so on, so you can always double back and see. We're doing Bhagavatam study, not just wasting time. Okay, one more verse. It's 8:17, so I have enough time to cover the section, I think. Actually, I had this idea that so every devotee who has to give class, so they can take the section, and you just continue to give class until you finish the section. That way it's clear in your mind at least it's clear in someone's mind what's going on, right? And that way, because it's clear in one person's mind, they can make others to understand it, right? Instead of it being not clear in anyone's mind because no one is studying anything. So one devotee can be assigned the whole section, and he just continues to give class until he finishes his section. And that way it makes it easy to keep the continuity together, because that devotee can keep reminding us of the continuity. If it takes that long to go cover his section, that's a good idea. There's a new way of giving Bhagavatam class. That way we're doing like Bhagavatam study, we're making best use of the time. One more verse. Is that a good idea? That's a good idea. Huh? Why not? It would not work logistically. Oh, that's true. We'll figure it out. I think the idea is good. I think it's a good idea. We'll see how it can make it work. Huh? If some sections are long, they can be divided. That's not a problem. We'll figure it out. I think it's a good idea. Because at least one person should know what's happening in the class. And then that one person can make others to understand. Text number 6. Y'all got it up? Adhuneha Mahabhaga Yataiva Narakan Naraha Nanogra Yatanan Nyayat By the way, I suggested this idea to Srila Prabhupada Maharaj. He liked it. He said, yeah, Burijan is also doing like that. That's a good idea. He told like that. Translation, oh, greatly fortunate and opulent Shukadev Goswami. Now his question is finally coming. Now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. Finally, he gets to his question. After encouraging Shukadeva Goswami by strong topics discussed in the previous cantos, now he gets to his question. How can people be saved from going to hell? The Christians would probably like this question too. But they won't agree with the answer, of course. Purport. In the 26th chapter of the 5th canto, Shukadeva Goswami has explained that people who commit sinful acts are forced to enter hellish planets and suffer. Yes, understand. It's not negative, it's part of the positive. Now Maharaj Parikshit, being a devotee, is concerned with how this can be stopped. Bhava is paradukha duki. In other words, he has no personal troubles, but he is very unhappy to see others in trouble. Paradukha means the suffering of others. Para dukkha. Para other people. Dukkha. Their suffering, dukkhi, makes me suffer. Isn't it? I don't get that sense when the Christians tell me I'm eternally going to go to hell. I don't get the sense that they're para dukkha dukkhi. I get a sense that they feel happy about my eternal damnation. Anyway. Real Vaishnava para dukkha dukkhi. Then he suffers. Understand? Para dukkha dukkhi. That's a Vaishnava. Prahlada Maharaj said, quote, my Lord, I have no personal problems. Why? For I have learned how to glorify your transcendental activities and thus enter a trance of ecstasy. That's how to get free from all problems. You glorify Krishna, constantly chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 and go into ecstasy. Do you have no personal problems, even if you're in a suffering condition? I do have a problem, however, for I am simply thinking of these rascals and fools who are busy with Maya Sukha, temporary happiness, without knowledge of devotional service unto you. Shocheta to vimukacheta sanindriyarta. Vimukacheta, their consciousness is turned away from Krishna. Vimukha, their consciousness is turned away from Krishna. Indriyarta, they only care about sense gratification. Maya sukhaya bharam. And as a result, they're carrying the burden of Maya Sukha, the burden of material happiness. Why my Maya Sukha is a burden? Because after you try to enjoy Maya Sukha, what generally ends up happening is you have to carry the burden of distress, isn't it? Dukkha yonaya evate. Sense enjoyment, Krishna says, is the womb that gives birth to the child of dukkha, suffering. So when one tries to enjoy Maya Sukha, he ends up carrying the burden of unhappiness. So Prahlad Maharaj is concerned about this. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnava. Because a Vaishnava fully takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he personally has no problems. He always chants, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama. And then he goes into ecstasy. So he has no problems. But because he is compassionate toward the fallen, conditioned souls, he is always thinking of plans to save them from the hellish life in this body and the next. The pathos is the problem of a devotee. The quality of feeling sorry or pity or compassion for others is the problem for a Vaishnava. Parashit Maharaj therefore anxiously wanted to know from Shukadeva Goswami how humanity can be saved from gliding down to hell. Shukadeva Goswami had already explained how people enter hellish life, and he could also explain how they could be saved from it. Intelligent man must take advantage of these instructions. Unfortunately, everyone's dull-headed. Fortunately, however, this entire world is lacking Krishna consciousness, and therefore people are suffering from the grossest ignorance and do not even believe in a life after this one. So why be concerned about things? In fact, sometimes they say this is, they criticize us that we're too concerned about the next life, that we're not putting enough attention on this life. Many Indians give this argument to their children, actually. Westerners is a whole different breed, but many Indians, they give this argument that you're so concerned about the next life that you're not giving enough attention to this life. How to have wife, children, family, and so on. Hold on, I said your question. The poor part is just, yeah. Yeah, nihilism is more like life, but there's no purpose to life also. There's no intrinsic purpose to existence. Although there's enough purpose to say that.
Right, anyway.
Unfortunately, however, in the entire world is like I read that. So to convince them of their next life is very difficult, isn't it? Because they have become almost in their pursuit of material enjoyment, isn't it? Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma na indriya pritaya nasa dumanye yato apanoyam. What is that? Asanapi klesha da asadeya. You know this verse. Who says it? Rishabde, you know? Nunam pramatta. People are crazy. Pramata. Mata means crazy. Pramata means very crazy. Why? Nunam pramata, kurute, vikarma. Because they're always doing unfavorable activities. Vikarma. Why they do vikarma? Indriya priti. Because they're always doing some foolish thing. And they're mad after it. So it's very hard to convince them, Prabhupada says, because they're mad after sense enjoyment. Nevertheless, our duty, the duty of all sane men, is to save them. Maharaj Parashita is the representative of one who can save them. What is that verb? Pranayat Arta Shreya Acharanam Sada Shreya Nam Acharanam Sada. I quote that in like 3-4 years. Lord Chaitanya quotes this verse from, it's from when Lord Krishna was glorifying our great, like great saintly person. So then Lord Chaitanya says, it is the duty of every human being, what to speak of members of the Sampradaya, in which Lord Chaitanya is speaking to the members of the Sampradaya. The duty of every human being to dedicate his life, his attire, his wealth, his diya, his intelligence, and his vacha, his words.
Why is that? Attention.
You know, everyone was just looking. No one knew what to say, you know. So we need like a little song book so we can just bust out into song. It's very purifying actually to sing like that. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya, the inundation was drowning everyone, but some people were very expert how to escape, like the Mayavadis. Very expert, the Mayavadis, the atheists, how to dodge the inundation and love of Godhead. They were all very expert. So Lord Chaitanya said, I wanted to drown them also. I wanted to drown them, but they're so clever fellows. They're getting out. So then he thought of, he used his intelligence. Pranaya Artha Diyavacha, Shayanam Acharanam. So that he used his intelligence, how to get them too. And then for that reason, he took sannyas, you know, as a method of trying to capture these persons as well. So yeah, there are people. Everyone is mad. It's not like the people who finally come to Krishna are not mad. In fact, once they live with us, we really, and sometimes we desire not to be so close to them even. And anyway, so everyone is mad. And if you want to attract a certain sector of mad people, because ultimately they're spirit souls who are bewildered by the spell of Maya, because they're smart, but doesn't approach the absolute truth. Any other point? Question, comments, concerns, doubts? Do you understand what the first section of verses was about? What was the first section of verses about? Yes, simple point. Next, I have an idea. Well, my other idea is good, but if anyone can't do it on a particular reason, I'll do it that day, since I'll be aware of all the topics anyway, obviously reading everything. So everyone could take their section, but if for some reason they cannot make it that day, then I'll do it that day. Carry on then. That'll work. Well, then they could just do one verse, and that's when guest speakers come. We can add, no, we won't explain to them what we're doing. We just let them do one verse only and give a normal class. And then the next day or whenever it's the next time they speak, then the person will just cover that. And he'll say those two verses were already covered by the previous speaker. I'll continue from this place like that. It could work. And we can maybe learn the sixth canto a little bit nicely. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Ecstasy, go into ecstasy.
What trouble?
I'll get it, brother. It's yours.
Yeah, just want it. I don't want it. I just want it.
Oh, you want to do this one?
I got one yesterday.
Chayanishta. Thank you.